This is the Bearcast, presented by Bird, Kulchin, Ford. Bird, Kulchin, Ford has been in Waco since 1936. Ford is the number one selling truck in Texas 43 years running. The Bearcast is also presented by WellMed Medical Management and USMD Health System Dallas. Here's Craig Smoak and Grayson Grundhaver.
Welcome in on this Tuesday, June the 25th, 2024. It is the Bearcast. I'm Craig Smoak, joined as always by Grayson Grundhaver. Got Jack McKenzie behind the scenes. And thank you, however you're listening to us, whether your favorite podcast platform or live on YouTube. The Baylor Athletics on Sikkim 365 page is where you can find us live Tuesdays at 11:15. And anytime you want to, after the fact, if you haven't already, we'd appreciate it if you hit that like and subscribe button. And beyond that, just sit back for the next hour or so, and we're going to talk all things important topics and whatever else we can fit in when it comes to Baylor football. And, you know, that's going to be the bulk of it this week, but other weeks there's a little bit of a sprinkling of other things like basketball, of course, or baseball, what have you. But we are in the heat of the summertime, and so we're going to mostly be football for the next 60 minutes or so. Grayson, camp season in full swing, another weekend in the books. You staying hydrated? You staying cool out there? It seems like it's starting to really become summertime now.
Man, it has been hot. It has been so hot in Waco. I don't know how these recruits are out there for, you know, I guess it's like 5 hours running in the sun and everything. It has been, it's been a test like it normally is, but it's been fun as well. Getting to see a lot of the high school recruits, also getting to see active players who are out there, you know, helping with campers. And this past weekend, RG3 was there, obviously, for his annual camp. So it's been a lot of fun, and it's nice to kind of be in McLean Stadium. You kind of get that football feel again during the summer.
Yeah, definitely. Any thoughts on RG3? I mean, we had him on the show last week. He gave his vote of support for Dave Aranda. I think he just is echoing everybody else who hopes Dave Aranda can turn this thing around and be more of a 2021 result than a 2022 or 2023. But he's, you know, throwing his backing. I think that's kind of where everybody is hey, we like this guy, but we know he needs to win. And they seem to have a pretty good relationship. And here he was in town for another camp, and that's become an annual thing now, which is very cool. I think he enjoys the getting back to football on the field mentorship side of things, and obviously helping Baylor as well. And Baylor, I'm sure is open arms to have RG3 on campus once a year to hold a camp. So any thoughts just from that standpoint on that event and kind of how you've seen that progress?
I mean, first of all, I think it's just really cool that he's maintained this relationship with the Baylor program, with Dave Aranda, and it's great for the school in general, just for him to be around the program so much. He brings his whole family to the camp. They were all there, his wife and kids. They were all there watching the camp, out there running around the field, all of those things.
Doing TikToks and all that stuff.
I guess, yeah. But ultimately, I mean, it's great for the school to have him out there. And I know it's really cool for the high school athletes as well to kind of be around RG3, a legend in the state of Texas, and a guy that obviously, you know, won a Heisman Trophy at Baylor. It's a huge deal.
Yes, it is. So that's cool that RG3 was back in town, and hopefully he's around for some games this fall. But he had some good words to say about Dave Aranda, as we mentioned, and it was a good weekend. Once again, when it came to some commitments and adding on to the 2025 classes, we will dive into. There are, three commits to talk about from the last 7 days. And so we'll start to unpack that. But first, I did want to make mention of just a general note with the athletic department and a big donation. Bob Simpson, a big-time supporter of Baylor Athletics for a long time now, Fort Worth resident. Was he not the one that donated to the TCU facility and like had people up in arms? Am I remembering that correctly?
He might have been.
Yeah, he helped.
I don't know for sure.
Yeah, but he helped throw in some cash for TCU's like new science center, and I don't know the exact name of it, but it's like a Kazkazati type of thing. And if I'm remembering correctly, I think it was Bob. But hey, your philanthropy is your philanthropy. You're going to donate where you do. And he's a Fort Worth guy, so I understand that to an extent. But I do remember reading that at the time and going, well, he's giving a lot to Baylor. Don't get me wrong. Like, the Simpson Athletic Center is, you know, a big deal and more beyond that. But here he is again. And just kind of, I don't know what led up to this, if anything, but cool to see this drop the other day. Is Bob Simpson announced, along with Baylor, a $10 million gift from him to support Baylor Athletics and the GiveLight Capital Fund. Baylor will recognize Simpson's philanthropic support through the naming of the Bob R. Simpson Performance Center within the J. and Jenny Allison Development Center at the Paul and Alejandra Foster Pavilion. So a lot of donations with those families right there. And you had a comment from Linda Livingstone in this. I think Mac Rhodes may have commented as well. The statement from Bob Simpson said, "As a Bear with a few decades of experience, I know that success comes from leadership and vision. Scott Drew has delivered both for his young men and the national presence of Baylor. With our baseball team, Mitch Thompson provides that same promise for years to come. We are fortunate to have these inspiring and ambitious coaches to lead us. I'm proud to be able to offer this support for my Baylor Bears." And yeah, Mac had a comment about Simpson's generosity, but he will see this donation go to the GiveLight Capital Fund, but also some of it will support, quote, future capital enhancements to Baylor Ballpark with naming recognition to celebrate this gift as well. There will be an additional portion of this gift that establishes the Bob R. Simpson Endowed Excellence Fund for Men's Basketball, which will provide significant resourcing for the men's program, such as travel expenditures, equipment purchases, other costs associated with running a national championship caliber program. So $10 million. He's obviously going to get a little bit off that as far as you're going to see his name on some more stuff that will last into, you know, perpetuity. But big for baseball and basketball, it seems like, in particular. And in this day and age, man, like, donations like that are, I mean, they're always a big deal. But I think in particular in this day and age of NIL and for non-football programs, that's even a bigger deal.
Right, and those two sports seem to be the focus in all of this. It's really interesting because the way that the press release is worded, it seems like most of this is going to go to facilities. And I think initially when it came out, there was a lot of just talk about, oh, maybe it's going to go to NIL. You know, maybe it's going to go to being able to help improve the rosters. And it might do that to a certain extent, but it certainly seems like it's very focused on the facilities for both basketball and baseball, which baseball definitely does need some help there. But they also need some help at getting players. And I think NIL is an area where it could help. So I don't know how much of an impact it's going to have for that, but hopefully some, because I do think that's been an area that a lot of Baylor fans have talked about, just saying that, oh, you know, Baylor baseball doesn't have the resources. Baylor baseball doesn't have this, doesn't have that to compete. Well, you know, hopefully this helps them get closer to that.
Yeah, the Bob Simpson Performance Center, which is a part of that gift, 6,000 square foot training space supporting both the programs within the Allison Development Center. And it goes into the details about, like, some of the equipment and things that they will have. But men's and women's basketball, they're going to have the Simpson Performance Center with all the bells and whistles. And then, yeah, it's going to be divvied up, I guess, in other ways to support basketball and baseball. So, yeah, I mean, $10 million is $10 million. That's worth noting for athletics, and that was certainly something pretty cool. But, yeah, how much of it's like, hey, Mitch Thompson, here's $5 million to go build a baseball team. Yeah. I don't think it's going to be that clear cut, but Baylor got better as a result of this donation. So we'll see how that can hopefully amplify them on the field, because off the field it is certainly some good news. All right, so just wanted to make mention of that because you don't get those big drops of money that often, and that's certainly notable. And so looking forward to talking more about that as we start to see the clear picture of what all that turns into. Meanwhile, as we've said, it's been a busy time for football and a busy time for getting commitments. The Bears now up to 12 for the class of 2025. And when we last spoke to you, I believe we had talked about Bo Onu. You got that last week. I was out for yet another funeral, unfortunately. Hopefully that's not the case for a while, but I've had that happen a couple times here recently. So you covered Bo Onu, the safety from Hebron, and that leaves us with three new guys to talk about here over the last week. Trent Spence, Leo Almanza, and Harrison Clough, who came in just last night, as a matter of fact, that graphic dropping and that pledge going public. So I guess let's start in order. Trent Spence, linebacker, the first of the three pledges from this past week. Klein Collins High School down in Houston. Some notable offers, Kansas, Utah. Always notable to see Utah for a defensive prospect. UTSA, always good to see them because you typically respect Jeff Traylor and staff's evaluations. Cal, Kansas, amongst some others as well. So what do you think about Trent Spence? How'd this go down? What's this mean? So on and so forth.
I think the biggest thing with Trent is just that Baylor only had two linebackers take official visits during this period, and it was Trent Spence and Caleb Burns, who we'll talk about a little bit later. But those have been the clear two top priorities at the linebacker position, a position that they really have to improve at going into this year, but also for future years. You know, we've talked about that position a lot. They have a lot of guys who just simply have not lived up to the potential that I think a lot of people thought they had coming in. It's just a room that feels like it needs talent. It needs more talent. It needs more depth as well. So, yeah, Trent Spence, he's out of Klein Collins High School. You mentioned the offer list. He's 6'3", 220 pounds. He's going to slide in pretty well to the Will linebacker position, most likely. Maybe even Mike, depending on how things shake out with Caleb Burns. But in general, very good athlete, shows that on film. Very good at getting after the quarterback, which is something that Baylor really, really focuses on as far as linebackers being able to blitz. We saw how much of a factor that was with Dylan Doyle and Terrell Bernard during their time at Baylor. So I think Spence really fits that role. I still view him kind of as a raw prospect. There's still areas when it comes to reading plays quickly that I think he needs to develop at. But in general, I think you're not going to find many better athletes at the linebacker position weighing this much and just having this kind of upside. And that makes it a really intriguing get for Jamar Chaney and Dave Aranda at a position of a big need. So yeah, this was a really good one, a really big one, I think, for the staff to finally get in place.
So the first, I guess, official linebacker commit the way he's listed, but who would you consider somebody else as a linebacker in this class?
No, so like I mentioned, it's him and Caleb Burns. Those are the two that they really want. I think there has been some talk, and when you look at kind of Bo Onu's profile, right, you could say maybe he could play Will. I think he's more of a star. But you can make the case. So he's kind of the other one that's kind of a fringe linebacker type. But Trent Spence is a true, he's playing linebacker prospect that they really, really wanted. And this is Jamar Chaney's first get as a Baylor coach, high school, that is.
Well, it's good to break through and get that going and maybe a little momentum as well. He certainly was able to go to that Western Kentucky Will in the transfer portal a couple times, get guys like Kendrick Simpkins out of there, and who was the other? Jacquez Evans, yes, as well. Yeah. So he was able to do that, but now getting on the board in high school recruiting, which still remains an important part of putting the puzzle together, but they kept adding pieces. Leo Almanza, a quarterback from Byron Nelson High School. He had offers from the likes of Arkansas and K-State, who he chose the Bears over. That was a notable win. Tech, Utah, those are some notable teams. UTSA, once again, they must throw out 2,000 offers, but everybody follows their lead, it feels like, at least.
Everyone's first offer.
Yeah. So Cal on this offer list, once again, Northwestern, so pretty smart guy as well. Leo Almanza, cornerback, Byron Nelson, what's it mean? What's the deets?
Right. So for him, I mean, another priority type guy for Kevin Curtis. They brought in a lot of cornerbacks. So unlike linebacker, they really kind of spread it around and tried to find, you know, the best fit for the program. And really, I feel like they needed to take a lot of shots on guys because some of the guys were, I think, viewed as more long shots that they did bring in. But Leo, not that way. Leo was a priority, a guy that they felt like they would have a good chance at landing. And Leo had been very adamant in just his interest in Baylor, and that continued through his official visit until he committed. And so for him, it was Utah, Kansas State, and then he canceled his Houston official visit after his Baylor official. But yeah, Utah, Kansas State, and Baylor wins a head-to-head battle against those two. That's really big. Now, as far as what's he bring to the table, he's about 6'1 and a half, 6'2, 175 pounds. So he's got the length, which is something that if you look at Baylor's cornerback depth chart, they really like length. They like these guys like a LeVar Thornton, like a Caden Jenkins, like a Tevin Williams, guys with long arms that are physical and rangy. And so for him, the biggest thing that stands out, he had 4 interceptions last year, which is great. That's a very good number for a cornerback in high school. But then he also played offense, and he had 518 yards and 9 touchdowns on the offensive side, was the utility player of the year in his district in 6A football. So in general, you're looking at a guy that's just really good at football and really can make plays on the football, which I do think is very important to this staff. They want to create turnovers, and in order to create turnovers, you got to have playmakers and guys that can really catch the football. And that's what I think Leo Almanza brings to the table. This is a great get because this is the kind of guy that I think you look 3 years down the road and he's at Kansas State and you're like, oh, it's preseason All Big 12 time, and Leo Almanza is on that All Big 12 list. You know, just the developmental portion of this, it's so important. And to see schools like Utah and Kansas State being heavily involved in trying to get him, I think that just validates kind of the staff's identification of talent.
So that was number 2 from this past weekend, and the Bears were not done there as they were able to add not only number 10 and number 11, but number 12 as well, as it rolled in on Monday. Harrison Clough, this is an out-of-stater, Columbia, Missouri, Columbia High School. There's Arkansas again. There's Houston again as far as the offers go. Also Purdue out of the Big Ten, Memphis, Southern Miss, Sam Houston, a few others as well, all a part of the offer list for Harrison Clough. So Missouri, huh? That seems quite random.
It's actually Mississippi.
Okay, Mississippi.
It's Columbia, Mississippi. I actually got asked this question because I think when I first made his profile, I did put MO. But in all my posts, it's been Mississippi. But yes, it's Columbia, Mississippi. Very small town there in Mississippi.
Now that you say that, I recognize reading that yesterday, but I'm looking at his profile on our website.
Yeah. Yep, and that's my fault.
That'll get fixed here. That'll be fixed in 5 seconds. But Columbia, Mississippi, thank you for clarifying there.
Yeah, so I think the thing with Harrison Clough is it's pretty just, I mean, think about how big this is for the class when you look at the offensive line. They lost Deshaun Bryant. They lost Cash Courtney. They lost Jamin Brown. I mean, all three of these guys decommitted because essentially of uncertainty with the offensive line coach, because you had Eric Mateos, you had, you know, Chris Kapilovic, and now you have Mason Miller, but it was all in a 6-month time period. So it's really hard to build that cohesiveness with the staff when you have that kind of turnover. But Mason Miller came in and really had to identify the guys that were offered, who he felt like Baylor had a great chance with, and also who fit this new scheme that they're bringing in. And ultimately, Harrison Clough is a guy that visited multiple times, and then he took his official visit. So he was clearly a guy that they made a very top priority in this class. And I keep saying that, but it's very true. Guys that they bring in on official visits are the top priorities for this staff, and Clough fits that. And they haven't brought many offensive linemen on official visits. This past weekend was really the big weekend of offensive linemen. And they're able to get him locked in. I think he fits kind of what they're looking for at the guard spot. He's about 6'4", 305 pounds, I think is what he's going to be closer to. And by the end of the year, might be even more than that. But they're looking for that. They want to see power up front. They want to see guys that fit an inside zone running scheme, see guys with a lot of power. That's kind of what they're looking for. And I think Clough really fits that as being kind of this massive potential guard prospect that they can plug in and feel really good that he's going to have a pretty safe floor in the future. So I like what they got here. He committed to Baylor over Arkansas, Purdue, Tulane, Houston, Memphis. So a pretty good offer list as well. And he's a 3-star prospect. Kind of, I'd probably have him as like an 87 type or an 88, somewhere around there.
So those are the 3 new additions from this past weekend. Trent Spence, linebacker from Houston, Leo Almanza, corner from Trophy Club, and then Harrison Clough, offensive lineman from Columbia, Mississippi, now becoming commits 10, 11, 12 for the class of 2025. And this was, what, the second weekend of camps? Or are we on the third week?
Third official visit, third camp.
Past weekend. Yep. So it's flying by already. I think that's because I've been in and out of town. I'm like losing track of what weekends we're on at this point. But yeah, because I was gone last week. So yeah, we're past number 3. So 12 commits, 3 camps, a bunch of visits, as you mentioned, not just opening the floodgates and letting guys roll in just willy-nilly, but really making it a focused practice. So you know what questions next is, I guess, where does that leave them? They're at 12. We know they've got a long way to go. They're, you know, we're looking at, what, 20-something when all is said and done as far as the class goes. I mean, that's kind of been the expectation.
Yeah, I have a little bit of an update on
okay,
that.
Okay, so we'll have an update on that. But the theme has been a regular-sized class, if not slightly larger, which would mean 20-plus. They're at 12 now. Who knows how it all sticks together? We got a ways to go here. But not only where does that leave them, but now moving forward, what is there left as far as the camp cycle and visits and, you know, just the rest of this summer? How's it all progressing moving forward?
So official visits are pretty much done. They're not going to have another official visit weekend. I don't even know if you can have one until the fall. I'm not sure how it works in the month of July. Maybe they're able to have one at the end of the month, but they do have a camp at the end of the month. So maybe they could do it like that. Not 100% sure if that's going to happen or not. That's a month out. So we'll see. I think the biggest thing right now is this is decision week. The next week and a half, I mean, there's about 12 guys who are making decisions in the next week and a half, like have dates that they want to make their commitment decision. And of those 12, these are all guys who took official visits to Baylor. So a lot of decisions coming up. You could see Baylor simply fill out their class in the next week and a half. It's possible.
Man, that'd be nice, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would be. It's possible. I kind of think it'll probably get around. I've been pretty adamant that they needed to be around 17, and I still think they need to get around that number somewhere, you know, 15, 16, 17, 18, somewhere in there would be a great landing spot for them coming off of all these official visits going into the rest of July. But yeah, so a lot of decisions coming up. As far as what I meant on the, you know, amount of high school prospects they're going to take, I'm starting to wonder if things haven't changed a little bit on that front. I think there was this approach of, okay, we want to have the highest ranking possible. You know, we want to be nationally ranked as far as our recruiting goes. But I think there's been a change in that. And because in order to do that, you'd probably have to take like 24 guys, just being honest.
When you're averaging three stars, yeah.
You're going to have to take like 24 guys to be right on that fringe. And you're going to need some rankings to go your way.
Here's the deal for, I mean, most folks listening to this already know, but if you're going to have a smaller class, you better have like really high four stars and some five stars, and that's the way you can stay high in the rankings, because otherwise it's all about volume and then the average grade. So if you're a Baylor class with a bunch of guys who are across the board three stars, basically, then yeah, you'd need like 25 guys to register on the top 25 opportunity to be on that list.
That's why it doesn't matter if Baylor takes 17 and is ranked, you know, 40th and Kansas takes 25 and is ranked 30th. It, you know, it's just extra bodies, more scholarships to work with. But I think for Baylor, the biggest thing for them is I think they want to make sure their spot's open for the transfer portal. I think that is just of utmost importance to the staff. I think they saw the fact that they were able to land such high quality guys, or at least they think they've landed such high quality guys this off season. I think they want to be able to have the opportunity to do that going forward. And so you don't want to fill up too quickly on guys. You don't want to fill up all your roster spots, all your scholarships. And so for that reason, I think I've lowered the number a little bit. I think initially I was thinking they might try to get around 25 has been kind of the reoccurring theme that I've mentioned, but I think it might be closer to 20. So somewhere in that 19 to 22 range is kind of where I've shrunk it a little bit, which means they're kind of running a little bit low on spots, honestly, you know, for all these guys that have interest. So a lot to wait on there. And I don't know how you want to go through some of these guys, but we should definitely talk. I mean, there's a lot of decisions coming up here.
Yeah, well, I wanted to make mention something first about the transfer portal, because when we've talked about it, it's been a new reality to have to get used to just the number of guys, just the constant ebb and flow of the class that you're putting together. The combination of high school and transfer portal, and the last couple of years Baylor's taken, you know, 10 to 15 guys, and this year 16. And I know at times been like, golly, 16's a lot, but man, when you look at the Big 12 and you look at the quote unquote rankings, which again do give some weight to quality, or excuse me, to quantity over quality, I think there are sites that are trying to figure out a better way to do that and are getting there, but still you're rewarded by just having more guys, mm-hmm. basically. But still, you look at the Big 12 in particular, I don't even care about the rest of the country right now because that would be like a whole show to explore this all, but Colorado took 42 guys. UCF took 27.
Crazy. Yeah.
TCU took 24. Arizona State took 29. Houston took 27. Arizona took 24. Cincinnati, 25. So, I mean, I know some of those are coaching changes, but not all of them. I mean, Arizona is. Houston is. But all the rest of are carryover coaches, and they're coming off of bad years and trying to flip this thing. So they took double what Baylor's taken mm-hmm. in more than a handful of cases in the conference. Now, granted, there are others. Tech has the same amount as Baylor. West Virginia's about right there, 13. And then there's a handful that took 10 or less. It just depends on the details. But, yeah, 16's not crazy. Like, it kind of seems when you're constantly talking, like, yet another transfer. I can't imagine doing a Colorado podcast. I'd lose my absolute mind. But I say all that to say it makes sense that if you're going to, on average, take about 15 and then still maybe have appetite for more, then, yeah, maybe you're going to leave yourself some extra spots. So if you want to go to 20 next offseason, you have the opportunity to go to 20, and you're not doing what you did last offseason where you're like, who are we basically kicking off the team to find room to bring in the receiver that we need?
Yeah, 27 is what they should have taken last year. Like, yeah. You know what I mean? So it does change each year. You're exactly right. And so this year, the thing for Baylor is they have so many young guys that played a lot last year. So you're not really trying to recruit over anyone because you also are developing guys, right? And so I think it is pretty telling. You know, some of the schools that took a bunch of transfers, like, you can go through them and be like, wow, that guy's good. And that's great. But how's the rest of their roster? Because if you're just building with transfer portal guys, you are going to run into some problems. And we've seen that over the years. I mean, we saw it with Colorado last year. They didn't hit on everyone they got, and therefore they had a bad year. And I think to a certain extent, TCU was kind of in that same boat last year, and they're kind of doing the same thing this year, except I think more of their guys are kind of proven commodities. Last year it was more, you know, old five-star guys.
They chased names last year.
They really did. I think they've changed their approach some, but they still took a lot of transfers this year. And so it is kind of, I do have some questions about that. You know, why did you have to do that? But I think in Baylor's case, you just want to make sure you have room, because you're exactly right. If you go into this year and let's say you barely make a bowl game and it's enough that Dave Aranda, you know, keeps his job, but you also are sitting there saying, we need to get better. Like, we still need to find a way to get better. You need to be able to have room to do that. Because as we've seen during Dave Aranda's tenure at Baylor, it's been really hard to have a ton of roster attrition for good reason and for bad reason, right? Like, you need to lose some guys, which, you know, has been tough for Baylor. But then guys who you want to keep, they've done a great job of keeping those guys too. So it's kind of a mixture, a tug and pull. But I think in general, Baylor does need to keep some spots open so that they can attack the transfer portal aggressively. And going into next year, which we're going to get a question about this in the mailbag, they do have positions they absolutely have to address through the transfer portal, such as wide receiver, such as edge, where they're going to have to find a body or two that they're going to have to use resources on.
So leaving themselves some breathing room, it looks like, means you could take a smaller group of high schoolers. They're at 12 now. You mentioned there's another 12 guys perhaps that could be Bears here in the next few days as we get into this decision period, as you mentioned. So all that in mind, I guess, give us how much of the rundown you want to reveal. Obviously, become a premium member of Sikkim 365 and get all the news and notes and dirty details of where Baylor stands. We're not going to reveal everything free on this show every week, but we'll give you a sampling. And if you want the main course, then become a premium member. We'd much appreciate that support. So I guess, just kind of how do you want to unroll this here with the decisions and what we're looking at here?
Yeah, I'm just going to kind of go through some of the bigger battles that are kind of public, more public announcements. So, you know, Cy Falls linebacker Caleb Burns, we mentioned him. He's going to make his decision on July 1st. He has that announced. That's when he's going to do it. He took official visits to Baylor, Houston, Texas Tech, SMU, TCU. Those, I believe, are his top five. I kind of, at this moment, think it's going to be Baylor versus TCU. That's kind of where I'm at right now. I do think that a few of these other schools are definitely in it, like Texas Tech. Specifically, they're kind of my dark horse in this because they made up a lot of ground, I think, in his last official visit. And I do think there's a relationship there, I think, for Caleb as well. So, in general, I guess those three are the ones to keep an eye on. I think Baylor has built a great relationship with him. They've been really consistent. They even kind of weathered the coaching change going from Christian Robinson to Jamar Chaney. And they were able to maintain a great relationship with him and his interests. So this one is still up in the air. I can say this, though. You know, he's been the priority at the linebacker position, him and Trent Spence. So Baylor's kind of gone all in here, and so it feels like one they absolutely need to land just because they've spent so much time recruiting him. They stopped recruiting other linebackers. They really just focused on him. And just, you know, to kind of give people an idea of kind of where I see him and who I see him as, I think he is very similar as a high school prospect to Torian York and to Terrell Bernard, and that makes him very intriguing. Like, he's not going to test out of this world measurables-wise, but he is just a really good football player who has been highly productive the last 2 years. I mean, just elite production for a high school prospect.
All right, sounds like he's one you want to get. And Torian York, man, Baylor would love to have held on to him. Goes to A&M and undersized whatever, becomes basically a team captain in less than 2 years.
Guy can play
general
football.
Defense. Yeah.
Yeah, he can just play football, and people missed. A lot of people missed on that evaluation.
Yeah, Baylor had him for a while, and then A&M came calling, and I can understand it. SEC, bigger money, I'm sure, that kind of a thing, and just, you know, maybe there's a tie-in that we're not aware of as well. There's always that, you know, more personal side of it that we just kind of pretend doesn't even exist. Like, why would you go there? Like, maybe he has an uncle that he loved that went there or something. I don't know. But yeah, that was a huge flip for A&M, especially with Baylor's struggles in the secondary and at safety.
Linebacker.
But yeah, he would have helped tremendously this past season. So, all right, that's obviously one to make note of.
Yeah, let's move to wide receiver because this is the position that's probably going to just have the most intrigue, I think, over the next week and a half, I would say. So a lot of decisions coming up. So Shadow Creek wide receiver Ja'Cory Watson's making his decision on July 2nd. He's between Baylor, Houston, A&M, Ole Miss, and Boston College. I do think this is going to come down to Baylor, Houston, and Boston College. Boston College has just kind of been out of nowhere. He visited them this past week, and there's been a relationship there. They've prioritized landing him. I think that's all been very appealing for Ja'Cory. And then Houston is the hometown team. So they've definitely used that to try to, you know, lure him and get him to be a Cougar, which makes sense. They've really made that an emphasis, I would say, since Willie Fritz got there and even with Dana Holgorsen.
Yeah, that's just like the natural thing to do. I mean, Tom Herman did that H-Town takeover, getting girls from Paul Wall and, you know, embracing the culture down there. So, yeah, I think when you're at Houston, that's just the natural thing is to play up the whole H-Town pride thing. So I will say that they're doing it effectively. They're having a good run. I mean, everybody should be having a good run, theoretically, in recruiting right now. It's that time to get recruits, you know, locked in with your visits and camps and everything. But Houston is one of those teams that seems to be making some good waves right now.
Yeah, but currently I lean Baylor for Ja'Cory Watson, which is a four-star prospect. That's where I'm leaning right now. Things could obviously change, but I do think there's a really good connection with him in the Baylor program as far as, you know, his teammate Ashton Jones is committed. He's going to early enroll, so there's a great relationship there. Dallas Baker's been very consistent with him. I just think, in general, a lot of things are set up really well for Baylor to kind of offer him a great landing spot, and the new change in offense has, I think, made this very appealing as well. So that's going to be a very interesting battle. He's a four-star prospect, a very interesting one because he's a guy that's had to play quarterback the last 2 years, so it's taken away from his receiving production. But this year he's going to move back to receiver, and he and Ashton Jones for Shadow Creek are going to be very exciting to watch, I think, for that high school program. So that's another date coming up. Two more guys that were quickly mentioned here. Archbishop Shaw wide receiver Jacob Washington committed to Michigan after his official visit. That was yesterday. Not
that
surprising.
Bum program. What do they ever won?
Not surprising.
Oh, wait. Yeah.
He was between them, Missouri, and I would say Baylor was kind of on the outside looking in. But I think after the Michigan visit, it was pretty apparent that things seem to be trending in that direction. So he chooses Michigan. Another high-profile name, DeKaney, wide receiver, Tanook Hines. He took an official visit this past weekend. Notre Dame, USC, Arizona State, Texas are the schools that he took official visits to. And he's supposed to make a decision on the 3rd. We'll see if that ends up happening. His recruitment's been very weird, and I don't really know what to think of it because he's changed a lot of visits, made different schools priorities, visited a lot of kind of, you know, different schools when you talk about Arizona State and USC and then also Notre Dame, just kind of all around the country, to be honest with you. I don't have a great feel here. I kind of think he'll probably go somewhere else, but I do think that Baylor did everything they could this weekend to give themselves a chance. Final wide receiver to mention here has been probably the guy that's been on Baylor's radar the longest. It's Cibolo Steele, wide receiver Jalen Cooper, another 4-star prospect. Baylor was his first offer in June of 2022. He's got SMU, Kansas, Kansas State, Baylor, and Texas A&M as his final 5. His last official visit was to Texas A&M, so obviously I'm a little nervous as to kind of what that means as far as just kind of A&M last-minute kind of thing. They only have one wide receiver committed, so there is some, I think, a little part of me that's like, ooh, you know, what if he, you know, decides to go there right after his official visit. But he's kind of the guy that I think Baylor, out of all these guys, probably needs to land just because, again, how much time they've put into recruiting him. This has been a, you know, sophomore year to now senior year type recruitment of Jalen Cooper. He's one of the most productive wide receivers in the entire country. I think it was something like 1,600 yards and 24 touchdowns this past season in 6A football. He's an absolute monster, great route runner, can play the slot, can play outside. The only knock on him is his weight, and I don't think that really matters once he gets into a strength and conditioning program. I think his route running definitely translates. His ability to catch the football and his ability to just simply get open is something this offense really needs. So this is a big one for Baylor. That's a big battle that I feel like Baylor definitely needs to find a way to win, especially at that wide receiver position, which we've mentioned. Just it needs more depth and, you know, honestly needs more bodies and talent in the room in general going forward.
Yeah, Jalen Cooper would be a big get. It seems like he's a guy that I've seen on my timeline quite a bit, getting a lot of love from a lot of different places. And I think I saw him, you know, K-State the other day or something like that. I think just about everybody. I've seen him, you know, talking about or retweeting their comments to him and things like that. Just the attention that he's getting. Seems yep. to be a lot of attention. So he's a big-time player and does seem like a guy that would be a big get for a Baylor team that's looking for wins on the recruiting trail that hasn't necessarily had a ton of notable ones. Like, they've won some battles, but there's not a lot that, like, jump out. That seems like he would be one that would jump out and go, like, oh, that's a big one for Aranda and the staff.
Yeah, so, Watson as well.
Yeah.
Those two, I mean, that those are battles. Mm-hmm. Hines as well. I mean, those are high-level battles that Baylor would be trying to win there. Yeah, so, I mean, there's multiple other decisions. I think, you know, South Oak Cliff, Edge, Kamarian Morgan, I think he's going to take his time a little bit, but I do think Baylor is in the thick of it. So if you're looking for, like, who could be the best recruit they land in this class, I think Kamarian Morgan is kind of the guy that I'm looking at right now as far as one where, again, they need edge rushers because they're about to lose 3 of them after this year. They have playing time available. They have resources to, you know, go after him and compete to land him. I think he'd be the one that if I were to kind of say, okay, who would be the highest ranked recruit Baylor could land, it would be him. A&M is kind of the one that's sitting there battling with Baylor for him. SMU, kind of a dark horse in that. But Baylor's done a great job there. I also think, you know, they lost Max Granville, who committed to Penn State yesterday. So now it went from, you know, try to land both of them to now we absolutely have to land Kamarian Morgan in this class. They already have Christopher Johnson committed at edge, and they're very much in it for full sure edge Sheldon Rice as well, who's also a very, very talented prospect and a guy who I think has a great future as an edge rusher. His decision should be in the next week or so. And that's a Baylor, Houston, TCU, Michigan State battle. So another high profile one in my eyes. But landing him with Kamarion Morgan would be just a phenomenal statement, I would say, at the edge position. And that's a recruitment where his lead recruiter is, yes, Caleb Collins, but also very much Keenan Hall. And so for Keenan Hall to step right in and land Caden Knighton, Kamarion Morgan, and then also potentially Michael Turner, another four-star running back, that would be quite the statement for him to make on the recruiting trail.
Yes, part of why you hired him is to spice up recruiting and do his thing on the trail. So, yeah, that would be huge if he's able to pull that off. But in general, the staff obviously with a lot of fun items on the menu, and it's a matter of can they order them and reel them in and get them on the table and, you know, get them squared away is the big question, because there's obviously some other big-time schools that are up for some of these guys. So, yeah, it won't be easy to go head up and beat A&M these days. But if they can, that would be obviously a pretty big deal. So, yeah, a lot to watch for, a lot of fireworks potentially, a lot of duds potentially too. I mean, they're not going to win them all, but certainly you're in for, you know, some interesting times moving forward with a lot of these decisions to be made here soon. So you mentioned the edge rusher. So you mentioned three. Who are we talking about?
Yeah, so Sheldon Rice out of Fulshear. They already have Christopher Johnson committed out of Iowa Colony. And then Kamarion Morgan, South Oak Cliff.
Okay, saying who's rolling off of next year's roster.
Oh, Steve Linton. Jaquez Evans, and Garmin Randolph.
Okay, Evans is who
I
was.
Yeah, so they're losing all three of those guys next year. So, once again, you look at wide receiver and you're like, oh, that's scary. Look at edge. Because Kyler Jordan, he's a good player. But everyone else, like, there's not much reps. I mean, I like some of the guys in that room, like Corey Kelly, but there's just not a lot of depth there, not a lot of proven commodities.
Yeah, and Linton, I mean, that's still not like a for sure thing. I mean, there's a reason why he was available. He's a guy who hasn't matched kind of, I guess, maybe the expectations for what he could potentially be while he was, you know, bounced around lately at Tech. And so we'll see if he can be the guy that they hope that he can be and squeeze some out of that. Garmin Randolph, I think, is not fulfilled his greatest expectations, and he's been around a while. He's had some good moments, but he's not been like the dominant player that people felt like he could be, which is why he's back for another year. Otherwise he'd be off in the NFL, right? And then Jaquez Evans, I mean, coming over from Western Kentucky seems like a big pickup, but you don't really know until, you know, they go out and actually perform. So yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things to like about that group, but they are going to leave a pretty noticeable void when three of them are suddenly rolling off the roster. And especially if they all perform well this year, then even more of a punch to the gut that you've got to replace, you know, three guys' production. So, yeah, that's something that's got to be of tantamount importance for them in looking at the future of this roster and how to reload it.
There's a lot of optimism there with those three guys. Like, lot of optimism about what they're going to bring to the table athletically and as pass rushers compared to previous seasons, because they have not gotten that position right more often than not. And so I do think there's at least optimism. But like you said, I mean, even if they don't produce at a very high level, you're still losing all three of them.
Right.
So, I mean, you got to find ways to bring in talent. And Kamarion Morgan just fits that so perfectly. He's the kind of guy that, you know, he could be your Kalavon Chasen, you know, that Dave Aranda had at LSU. He could be that type of player. I mean, he's a top 100 prospect. And I think Baylor's going to do everything they can to try to land him, because I think he is either at the very top or right there at being the top of their big board for who they need to get in this class.
All right, so there should be enough recruiting to satisfy you for a good bit, at least this afternoon, right? And if you want more, you can go over to sikkim365.com and join the premium section and get all the recruiting that you want, get full recap of the weekend, and just joining the general conversation, which genuinely leads you down a bunch of different roadways of talking about various prospects or needs or the future. And there's certainly a lot of that going on over on the website right now. So there's an option for you, but we will keep you updated throughout the summer on all things recruiting, but save some of it for those subscribers. So plenty to get to and unpack there. Meanwhile, one other newsy tidbit from these past 24 hours, really, this on senior quarterback Daquan Finn. He has been invited to go take place at the take part in the 2024 Manning Passing Academy down in Louisiana as a participant for, I think this is like his second or third time being there at the actual camp. But coming off of a pretty stellar career at Toledo and now obviously at Baylor, and the favorite to be Baylor's starting quarterback when the season starts. That's why they put the big investment in him this offseason. But he will be a part of the festivities there at the Manning Passing Academy. Others that will be at the event from the Big 12. And there's quarterbacks from all over the country. But you'll see Rocco Becht from Iowa State coming off of a year where he performed pretty well given the circumstances, and there's a lot of optimism around him. West Virginia's Garrett Green, a lot of optimism and positivity surrounding him. And then Houston's Donovan Smith, who's coming off of an injury, so not sure how active he'll be with the, I think it was a shoulder that he had worked on. But he will also be one of those at the event. And then there's just a bunch of guys from all over the country. I mean, name a program, there's a good chance that their guy is on here. But Dante Moore of Oregon, Jalen Milroe of Alabama, Blake Shapen, Mississippi State, which is kind of weird to say, but he will be a part of the event as well. Connor Wegman, Texas A&M. Arch Manning will be a part of the Manning camp, as will his teammate Quinn Ewers, and so on and so forth. A bunch of quarterbacks that you would recognize, maybe some that you don't either, like Paxton DeLaren from Southeast Missouri State. They always have some of the smaller school guys get mixed in here as well, but that's a cool honor. Dylan Gabriel. I mean, basically anybody who's anybody is a quarterback, and even some guys who you haven't heard of are going to be a part of the Manning Academy events. So very cool honor for Daquan Finn. As I mentioned, he's taken part in this to some extent before, I think in the past couple of years, but it's always a neat honor and certainly one that you want to celebrate and promote.
Right, and I mean, these are the best quarterbacks in the country that are attending this camp. There's a few names that are missing. Like, I was surprised Noah Fifita wasn't going to this camp. That was kind of the most notable, and maybe he's got something, and so he can't come.
Right.
But of the Big 12 quarterbacks, he was the one that I was like, what? He'd be very good here, I think.
Yeah. Now that you mention that, I mean, Jalen Daniels isn't on here. KJ Jefferson. They all would
Avery
make
Johnson.
Sense. Avery Johnson. I mean, yeah, he would make sense.
Will Howard's going from Ohio State.
He is. He is on this list, and I don't know how they go about how they invite guys and determine all of that. But, yeah, if you're looking at just simply best quarterbacks, I mean, Noah Fifita is the most glaring one from the Big 12. But you could go on and on and on with this.
Cam Rising. Yeah, you could go on and on. But he was kind of the one that I was like, oh, I'm surprised he's not there when I was kind of going through that. Blake Shapen going, I felt like, was pretty interesting. But this is a great honor, I think, for Daquan Finn to be going to this. I think it'll be really cool to see how he does in the, you know, skills competition that they have on Friday night. That's kind of the big event. So I'm curious how he does there. I also want to say this, and I know that I've been pretty adamant that I do think Daquan Finn will be the starting quarterback for Baylor, but I don't necessarily think that him going to the Manning Passing Academy should tell everyone that that's for sure an indication of that,
right,
if that makes sense. So while I do think it will be him, I don't want people to say, oh, he's going to the Manning Passing Academy, so now he's for sure, he's been named. You know what I mean? I just want to make sure that that's not what people are kind of running with from this, but it's a good honor for him. Great publicity for Baylor as well, for him to be there and talking to other quarterbacks and being around such a prestigious event. So really cool honor for Daquan Finn, and you know, he continues to be the guy that I think is going to be the guy for Baylor.
Yeah, and I don't know how all the events work, like your counselor obligations versus camping, and I don't know the details of all of that, because there's some years where guys go and they're like counselors, and then, you know, you work out, and there's all sorts
they
of...
They all are counselors.
Yeah.
But then they have the big competition.
Okay, yeah. So, like, that's how it works. I think I was getting confused with Elite 11 or something, maybe.
Yeah.
There's so many different things. But, yeah, they're all counselors. So you're one of 20-something guys, I think is what it was, that will be helping out with campers but also competing as well. So, yeah, that's very cool, and you're around some of the best in the country. Not all of them, because obviously we mentioned some players that are pretty notable that aren't taking part in it, but pretty much everybody, you know, main headliners in the country are going to be at that event, and you're going to be around the Mannings, and that's always a cool experience given their incredible career. So, Yeah, that's awesome for Daquan Finn. He's been around there before, but just more valuable experience. And I don't think that it means anything either, tipping one way or the other as far as his starting status. I do think he's going to be the starter, though.
Right.
But, yeah, I just want to make that very clear. But, yeah, I don't think that's an indication like you said. So, there you go. There's another cool headline from this past week, and that'll lead us into the mailbag where we got a good number of questions this week. And let's see here. I had flipped over, so I'm right back on it, and there we go. Big Cheese, 83, what is your unpopular opinion about what you are expecting from any aspect of the 2024 Baylor football team? Unpopular meaning directly opposes generally held beliefs among either Baylor fans or college football media in general.
So I guess the belief is that I think Baylor's going to be pretty good, and I guess my indication of that is I think they're going to be around a top 40 team in FPI, which sounds like, oh, top 40, that's no big deal. Baylor was 86 last year in FPI. Now, to just give you an idea of how attainable this is, last year Oklahoma State was 39, West Virginia 38, Texas Tech 36, Iowa State 32, UCF 31, and then the teams ahead of them were obviously all in the top 40 as well. It's not that insane to think that they make that jump. And honestly, in order to make a bowl, they're probably going to have to at least be top 50. But I will say it is interesting that Oklahoma State, a team that was number 39 in FPI, went 10-4. And that gives you an idea of just how much parity there is in the Big 12, how a few plays here or there can drastically just change your season. And so, you know, you see UCF at 31 and they went 6-7 last year. So a lot of things determine this and a lot of things can, you know, sway these things. But again, I think Baylor being a top 40 team in FPI kind of puts them right on that bowl, you know, 5-7, 7-5 kind of area. But I do think it also shows a huge sign of improvement if they are in that region. And I think as far as why is this unpopular, I think most people would say it's more likely that Baylor goes 3-9 than 8-4. And I guess what I'm saying is I think it's more likely they go 8-4 than 3-9.
I don't know that I have any opinion that's like directly conflicting, you know, a widely held belief, because I don't know that anybody's really talking about Baylor all that much right now. It feels like there's not a lot of discussion around them. So I think like what I hear is normally in this same circle of the website and just Baylor fans in general. So I don't know. Like, I don't really have a strong opinion. I think they've done everything this offseason they could theoretically do to improve. I mean, the coaching changes, I thought they handled that pretty well. The transfer portal, I thought they attacked that pretty well. The recruiting class is fine. I mean, they're not going to be the ones that dictate or sway this thing one way or the other. So I don't know that I really have a strongly, you know, opposition opinion. I don't know that I'd like really love their D line. Would that be considered something? But I don't know how anybody's really in love with the D line. So
the national media and Baylor fans definitely
are. Right. So like that, I don't like that's just something that popped into my head of like, well, maybe people are. I don't think so though. So yeah, I don't know that I have one, honestly. I'll continue chewing on that while we talk here to see if there's one. But there's not just a lot of like big standing opinions on them to kind of conflict with. You know what I mean? Yeah. I think everybody just kind of expects them to just be in the background and
David
Random
might
get fired. But
yeah, you'd have to make a stand on some like a Daquan Finn being like a top five quarterback in the Big 12. Yeah. Like you'd have to make a stand on something like that to go contrary, because everyone believes that. Basically, everyone believes Baylor's probably going to be pretty bad.
Yeah, and you covered the whole win, and I think that's the main thing that is actually something solid to argue with is like how good are they going to be? Mm-hmm. But I'm not as confident as you are, so I'm not really going against the opinion that they are, you know, barely going to be able to make a bowl game.
Right. It is pretty crazy though, because when you look at it, there were 10 teams in the Big 12 that were in the top 40. So all I'm really saying is that I think they're going to be a top 10 team in the Big 12, essentially. Now, the Big 12 changed a little bit because Utah and Arizona were 25-20 in FPI as well. So while it's a big stand because I think it shows that I feel like Baylor is going to be markedly better, it also isn't that crazy because 10 teams did it just last year.
Yeah. Yeah, so I'll have to get back to you on that one, but I don't think there's even a lot to really work with. But I think Grayson addressed the big one there, and certainly everybody's going to have their opinion one way or the other. And if he turns out to be right that they can make some jumps, and that's certainly possible for the reasons he pointed out, then, yeah, I think that bodes well for them. And it's certainly it's possible. I mean, anything's possible right now, and that's what they've been working towards all offseason, is to improve and jump into, you know, top 40 of the FPI, for example, and better their odds of getting that lucky break that turns into a win rather than losses piling up on each other like they did last year. Scotty B, the Baylor King, which new football coach, as in first year head coach at a school or someone that is new to the Big 12, do you look forward to hearing the most at media days?
So the easy answer for me is Deion Sanders. That's going to be just amazing yeah. to listen to, because he's going to say something probably just completely out of this world, and I can't wait for that. That's going to be spectacular. As far as a new coach, I'm really curious about Brent Brennan, and the reason I say that is because I think there's a lot of optimism about who Arizona is going to be this year, and while I do think that they have a great quarterback, and that usually means great things in the Big 12, I will also say this team didn't have a winning season, you know, since 2017, before last year. So I do have a little bit of a conflict there in just saying, oh, yeah, they're just going to continue being really good when, you know, recent history really doesn't tell us that they are.
Yeah. They are going to have a really good wide receiver quarterback combination, one of the best in the country, arguably one of the best in the Big 12. We'll see. I mean, Cam Rising to Brent Keithy, even though Keithy's a tight end, is one that's going to be super solid that we didn't get to see at all last year. Shador and Travis Hunter obviously is in the conversation as well, and you can go on. But that's where you start with them. They've got some other guys like Takario Davis on defense, guys that could have easily gone somewhere else that decided to come back. So they retained more than you thought. When Jed Fish left, they weren't obliterated. Brent Brennan walked into a really good situation. So I could see them exceeding my expectations, but I am expecting them. You lost your head coach. You lost a bunch of good players. Even though you retained some good guys, I still just think there's going to be a step back moving conferences. It's just a lot of change, but we talked to him yesterday on our show, and I really enjoyed listening to him. I'll enjoy listening to him again at Big 12 Media Days. I didn't think about Deion. Obviously, that'll be notable for sure. So, yeah, I'd put him there. And I'm also curious to hear Willie Fritz and just him talk about Houston and the momentum that they're building this summer and just what he foresees there, because I think they're definitely an afterthought probably for most people. So that's a good group. I mean, I'm a fan of Brent Brennan after yesterday, having the opportunity to hear him talk and ask him questions. And yeah, I think it's a good little new wave of guys to pay attention to when Media Days rolls around. But yeah, I'd say Willie Fritz, but there's obviously others that are definitely of interest. So thanks, Scotty. 06 Honda Accord. Can Baylor realistically get back to a College World Series in the next 5 years, or is college baseball officially an ad for the SEC? Well, that latter part sure seems to be the case. And with the money going the way that it's going, that just seems like it's going to be more of the case, you know, moving forward, especially now that you're adding Texas to the mix, and Oklahoma's pretty good too. So I think the latter is very real as far as the next few years, but what do you think? Can Baylor realistically get back to a World Series in the next 5 years or so?
I mean, I think these are two very different questions, because I think the SEC is, I mean, people talk about the SEC in football. The SEC in baseball is just ridiculous. I mean, there's so much talent in that league. And I mean, there's times where they got like seven teams in the top 10. I mean, that is just not something you see in any other sport.
Greg Sankey's working on eliminating the other three somehow so that the SEC has all of the top 10, I'm sure.
Yeah. And I mean, they're really good, really talented. And we saw it on display, you know, last night, Tennessee beating A&M and what was an awesome game, a lot of talent. But I think it's separate questions. Baylor making it to a College World Series does not have to be directly correlated with the SEC being really good at baseball. Like, the SEC is the dominant league in baseball. That's not going to change, in my opinion, because they care about it, I think, more than any other conference by a lot.
Yeah. They have the money to pour into it. I mean, you look at the stadiums and the talent and all that.
And their alums give to baseball. Like, there's baseball-focused alums. And so, but for Baylor, I mean, I was talking to one of my friends about this, because I would love to go to Omaha, but the only time I would go to Omaha is if I think Baylor was there. And just right now, it feels like this program is so far away from that. it doesn't seem realistic to even think that they're going to be in a super regional in the next 2 or 3 years and then a College World Series in the next 5. I mean, they would just have to hit with the right roster and put it all together and really make a lot of changes to get to that point. But right now, I don't see a path to that.
I would say no to answer your question. It's possible, but I wouldn't say it's very likely at all. And the gift from Bob Simpson will go away in helping with baseball, but they would need like all of that $10 million to themselves, it feels like, and not sharing it to get on track with, let's say, A&M and obviously, who did they just lose to last night? Tennessee. God almighty. To Tennessee and so on and so forth. So, yeah, it's going to take investment. It's going to take like finding some jewels and developing quickly, and it's going to take a lot. So, no, to answer your question, I don't see that realistically in the next 5 years. Certainly anything is possible, but I do think baseball is going to continue to be more of an SEC sport, I mean, as far as just the dominance of it, because they just have so many programs that are well constructed, well-suited, and well-endowed to compete in baseball at the highest level.
Well, and I keep hearing these horror stories about people go to these, like, the camps, like the Cape Cod camps and the leagues during the summer, and guys are just recruiting players from other schools. Sure, and it's just like, I mean, how are you going to compete with that when you're getting offered to go play for Tennessee and all the resources there? It's just, it's hard.
Well, it's like hard. Anything else is, you know, when you look at the super leagues, and even though that's starting to diminish and not be as much of a threat as far as a breakaway of like the SEC and the Big Ten, at least for right now and probably for the next several years, like we might see it start to take shape, and 10 years from now they eventually do it. But for right now, with the house settlement and everything seems to be like okay, although if you're not in the power leagues, you're not okay right now.
Right.
But I just think there's so much investment there. But ultimately, though, like, you got to go find the guys. Like, it's great you're getting paid to be on Tennessee's roster, but you never play. Do you want to play? Like, you know, there's always going to be talent that falls off because guys eventually have to play. Like, Alabama, Alabama can't just have every five-star receiver and they just make money in college and they don't care about the NFL. Like, that third-string wide receiver wants to see the field at some point. So that's where you go and you pick up guys. But the problem is like, does that guy then just roll over to Arkansas? Mm-hmm. And then they all just stay in the same, you know, atmosphere, basically. So, yeah, it's a hard thing to try and make up ground on if you're Mitch Thompson, with just how far ahead it seems like certain programs are. But
the Big 12 is not very good. I mean, it's open for the taking.
They just lost two of their best teams, too. Right. I know Oklahoma hasn't year in and year out been great, but they were good this past year, and they've been good.
And Tech and TCU took a step back this year. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's there. It just again, based on the past 2 years, it's hard to really have optimism in what that's going to look like in the next couple years. I think they're going to get better, but I mean, I said that after last year, and they were basically the same.
Yeah, they basically it felt like they were better, but yeah, they ended up pretty much in the same sort of pocket of, I guess, of feelings overall by the time it was all said and done, of disappointment and
outside,
oh god,
the top
is this
100 RPI,
oh my god, is this ever going to get turned around, and kind of the same feelings you had maybe a year ago. But that's a great question, 06, and appreciate you getting that conversation started. Doc Crowell, what will be the weakest link for 2024 in football and men's basketball?
So I still think it's going to be the offensive line. And I mean, that's saying the weakest link on a team that I think overall will be better. I still don't think the offensive line is going to be dominant.
All right, we know that one. What would you say is second? Defensive line?
No.
Safety?
Probably safety or linebacker. You take your pick. The middle of the field. That's where it was last year.
The whole defense. How about that? No, everybody but the corners.
But I actually think the defense line and cornerbacks I feel good about. But linebacker, I still have questions. And safety, I still have questions.
Particularly at linebacker, what part of them?
I think Keaton Thomas is going to be really good. If Keaton Thomas isn't really good, then they are going to be hurting. Because I think Matt Jones is a fine linebacker, but I think he needs a really good and athletic linebacker next to him. So if he's not getting that, it could just completely fall off the rails. If, you know, Jeremy Evans isn't ready to go, or if, you know, these other guys aren't ready, I'd be very nervous there. At star, you know, I think Carl Williams and Kendrick Simpkins will be good together in tandem, but I mean, I don't know that that's a sure thing.
Yeah.
And then safety, I mean, do Devin Bobby and Devin Lemire take a step forward because they have to? Because last year they were not good enough, you know? And so it's just, it's hard. The middle part of the field, I still have concerns, especially in the secondary there. But at least cornerback and defense line, I feel pretty good about.
Yeah, and corner, you feel like they can be pretty good. Because I've been spending a lot of time just thinking about the defense and kind of put my thoughts together for an article. And corner, you feel like they could actually turn into something even better. D-line, you feel like they can be good, but I don't think you think they're going to be, like, great by any means. So it's like,
I think they can be really good.
You think
maybe
so?
Maybe not great, but I think they can
okay.
be.
Okay, maybe I'm underestimating. Because
you're getting two jacks on the field more, and I think their jacks can be really good, and I just think they're more talented. Like, I went back and watched the first games, which we're going to talk about here in a minute, and watching T.J. Franklin, and T.J.'s great, great Baylor player, just missing tackles in the backfield left and right. Like, having more talented guys like a Trey Wilson or Jackie Marshall be put in those positions, I think those guys are making those plays more times than not, and I think that's a huge shift, because last year they were just couple inches away from making plays, and they just didn't make them.
Yeah, and I guess I'm also depends on if you're lumping Jackie in with the linebackers or if you're going to defensive
Jackie's
line.
Jackie's defensive line.
Yeah, I know, but I mean, you can look at it as a linebacker, I guess, in some cases, right? It's Jack linebacker.
Oh, Jack, yeah, that's true. Yeah,
that's what I mean. It's kind of your edge. Perception of where you put them. So,
right.
Yeah.
Well, okay, I feel good about edge. I don't feel good about the interior linebackers I guess.
In the reverse, you feel good about outside linebacker, I guess, on one side, but not. Okay, gotcha. Yeah.
It's kind of that mixture of stuff, but I do think they're more talented up front, right. And that's the biggest thing for me.
All right, Doc Crowell, how soon does Clough get on the field?
Oh, really quickly, men's basketball, because he asked about that too. For me, it's Josh O. It's the center position. I need to see a big step forward from him if I'm going to have full confidence in this team reaching its potential.
All right, fair enough. How soon does Clough get on the field?
I think 2 to 3 years at least. I think they're going to still have transfers come in that are older that will start over him, and I think he's going to need some time.
What would you have to see versus Tarleton State to be confident about the rest of the season?
Yeah, dominance. So I do think the first game of the year matters a lot. I think a loss would mean they're going 0-12. A close win means they're probably a 2 or 3 win team. A beat down by 3 scores in Baylor history usually means very good things. Tech beat this team 41-3 a year ago. Baylor should win this game pretty handedly. Something like 34-10 should be like kind of the low end outcome. But if you look through what Baylor's done in the past, I mean, it's pretty telling. When they blow out the team in the first game, they're usually pretty good. When they blow out a team in the first game, they're usually a bowl team. When they lose or struggle in the first game, it usually doesn't mean great things, as we saw in 2023, and then, of course, 2017 when they lost to Liberty.
Yeah, I mean, beating Tarleton in general doesn't mean a whole lot, even if they blow them out, but I need to see them blow out Tarleton, man.
Yes.
Like, come on, what are we talking about here? I mean, if you struggle with them and it's like a 14-3 game and 98,000 degree heat, and you walk away like, well, at least we won, then that's just a miserable start to the season.
It's the Long Island game.
Yeah,
remember
like,
that game this
year?
Yeah,
you've got to beat them and beat them convincingly and feel good about it and just have everybody go home happy on a Saturday to start the season. That would make me feel a lot better about things, even though it wouldn't guarantee anything. But, yeah, I need to see you dominate who you should be dominating. Do you like that the football seasons will be starting earlier?
Definitely, especially with the 12-team playoff.
Yeah, I mean, I do, yeah. I mean, it's less summertime to have to wait for college football to get here. I mean, albeit barely, but yeah, I do like the season starting earlier. Let's get to it. And yeah, I like that. I think the double open weekends this year is going to be very interesting, just for everybody to kind of handle having those two open weeks. But yeah, the early start and all that, I'm all for it, thanks to the large playoff, which I'm also looking forward to seeing how that goes at the end of the year. So it's going to be a fascinating year of college football. I mean, all the things, the earlier start, the later ending, the new conferences as far as their makeup goes. I mean, all the realignment from the past 2 years we've been talking about all starts basically this year. The expanded playoff, I mean, like on and on and on. There's just a lot of change and interesting things going on. All right, we'll try to fit in as many as we can, and what we don't get to this week, we'll roll over. Or I guess, you know, maybe answer on the website or whatever, but no chance we're going to get to all of them, I think, here. But Wyatt Smith, do you think the Manning Camp invite solidifies Daquan Finn as QB1? We both said no already. It's a nice honor, but it doesn't mean anything. Although we both fully, I'd put my paycheck on Daquan Finn's the starting quarterback. Which commitment date are you most excited for?
Ja'Cory Watson and Jalen Cooper, the 2 4-star wide receivers. They really, again, we've mentioned the depth chart. They need to add more guys there, and 2 4-star guys to that room would be massive.
Who is your wild card commitment, high-ranking player you believe Baylor will get when everyone else is saying elsewhere?
I'm going out on a limb here, but I think Kamarion Morgan. He's the guy that I'm kind of looking at that I think Baylor's got a very good chance to land, and it would be massive for this class.
Thank you as well, Wyatt. 6158 for life. Love the podcast. Thanks for being so consistent with the guys. Question for Grayson. After this upcoming season ends, what are the top 3 positions we will attack in next year's transfer portal?
Wide receiver, edge, offensive line, and then maybe linebacker if you don't feel like the guys behind Matt Jones are quite ready. But I think those first two, wide receiver and edge, are the two big ones, and then probably an offensive lineman or two most likely.
Which current coach will be the next to leave the program, either from having success and getting another job offer or because their position group underperformed and they are getting replaced?
I think the two most likely are Kevin Curtis and Keenan Hall. Both are kind of on a roll right now, Hall recruiting-wise, and Kevin Curtis both. I mean, really, what he's done with that cornerback room has been really impressive. There's a lot of talent there, and I'm expecting a huge year from that group.
Yeah, I mean, that's who I would say. Keenan Hall is getting a lot of attention for his recruiting abilities and just seems like an up-and-coming guy. And Curtis has been around a while at this point. Seems like he'd just be kind of due for a move in general anyways, promotion or just, you know, another opportunity. So, I think those two make a lot of sense. As far as the rest, I think there's a lot of proving that needs to be done, quite frankly. I mean, just off the top of my head, I don't know anybody that's like directly in line for a bump right now, but those two would seem to fit the bill. JHM Bandit, which of the 26 quarterbacks stood out to you at the Saturday camp? Does Quinn Murphy seem to be the priority to the staff?
Yeah, Quinn Murphy, Roman Seymour, and Jake Fetty were the three that stood out. Yeah, he's the priority. I really like his fit at Baylor. Baylor really wants him. He's priority in the 2026 class currently, and a guy that should be making a decision by the end of the year. And right now, I think Baylor is the favorite, and I he's a really good prospect. Would be a very nice get.
A lot of guys named Quinn these days.
Yeah.
At least it feels that way. Useless Chem Degree. Hey, guys, have y'all had a chance to review the first two condensed games yet? I know it's like reliving a nightmare, which is why my answer is no. But do you see anything from a talent or scheme perspective to encourage you for the upcoming season? Without a proper understanding of the schemes, I'm at a loss for optimism. Hopefully y'all can see a route to correcting the many deficiencies from last year.
I mean, the main takeaway I had was I think that the new offense is going to work really well because Baylor's only really ability to move the ball in those games were from shotgun because they were not able to run the football at all. And so I think that change will be huge. I think having a mobile athletic quarterback like Daquan Finn will be awesome. I will say this, though, you know, that first game, watching it again, if Blake Shapen doesn't get hurt, Baylor's probably putting up like 49 points in that game. Is it enough to win? I don't know, but they were, I mean, he was on a very high level coming out of halftime and just really, really played well in that game. You know, Utah, the kind of running game that they have, the kind of offense that they have really fit Baylor a lot better as far as being able to stop it. It was the spread you out teams that really caused concerns for them last year, which is what happened against Texas State. But again, they're replacing the star position, which really got attacked. You know, Bryson Jackson didn't have a great year last year. The defense line was very underwhelming, which I think will change this year. And like I said, offensively, I think that the changes in scheme will be drastic. And I do think if they had this scheme for the Texas State game, they probably win it. And if they have it for the Utah game, they probably win it.
Yeah, I think the Shapen injury obviously played a huge role in last year and just kind of the up and down nature of it all and just the disappointment in general. If he stays healthy the entire year, I think we're probably talking about things a little bit differently. You know, just nothing was all that great last year. I mean, the defense got picked on a lot, but it was just like when the offense had opportunities to give them a break, it just seemed never could.
And well, that was false starts.
Well, that was my problem. And I know Jeff Grimes got really pissed at the end of his tenure because people bagged on the offense and tried to make him the scapegoat, I guess, is what he felt like. And it's like, no, everybody was awful. Like every part of the team was not good basically last year. It wasn't that you were the scapegoat. But I do think there was an element of like, but you were bringing everything back. Like, you were already successful. It's like, how is your offense this bad? And I guess if it's shaping, it's shaping, but no, it was but beyond that.
How
it
did
was,
you not see that your offensive line was terrible. Going to be this bad?
So it's like the defense is like, I can kind of understand why they were as bad as they were in some cases. Like, Matthew Pallage was not ready for that. The talent wasn't ready for it. They were too young in some spots. But it's like the offensive line and the offense just was so underwhelming to me. So, yeah, I think that they're bound to be better in that regard. All right, we got one question, Jack. Can we get one question in to answer here? Brent B. U. Bear, I'm guessing Baylor didn't do enough to get Matthew Parker to flip, or is he still considering? Just asking, since his name wasn't brought up much this past weekend, out of the last 3 weeks, who is the recruit that you expected to commit or show high interest in Baylor that didn't go the Bears' way? And he's got one other minor one, so yeah. let's address that.
Not really sure where Matthew Parker is at. He's a Vanderbilt commit. I haven't posted much on it because I haven't heard a ton on it quite yet. But I do think he's still somewhat considering the flip. Who's the recruit you expected to commit? I don't know expected to commit, but I was fairly optimistic in Max Granville. I think that my answer to this will change over the next couple weeks if they do end up missing on, you know, one of their top guys.
And Brent also asked to close out the cast here. What does Baylor's win total need to be to keep a top 25 to 35 recruiting class? In my opinion, the team needs at minimum 7 wins this year.
Make a bowl game is a nice start, but in general, they need to start stacking good seasons in a row. That's been a real dilemma for Baylor. It's been like really good year, mediocre year, bad year. They need to do much more of the consistent winning.
Yeah, I think that's pretty simple. I think 8 wins is when you're really in a feel-good place because that's just a solid, direct winning season. So, yeah, I think 8's, you're really feeling great about things. 7, though, could keep you there. Anything less, and you're kind of falling backwards a little bit. But, yeah, I agree with you. Consistency. You got to prove, like, hey, year in and year out, we're good. Not just a flash in the pan, and we hope and we cross our fingers and pray that we'll be good again next year. It's got to be sturdier than that. So, thank you to everybody for the questions in the mailbag and for listening as you do each week. Grayson, anything before we go here?
No, just be sure to check out the premium side of things. Tons of news and notes and content. And, of course, 365 Sports Radio, once again, Monday through Friday.
Yes, check out the 365 Sports YT YouTube page, closing in on 50K subscribers. So I would love to get to that number, and we should soon. So thank you if you're a part of that as well. And click like and subscribe on this very channel here, Baylor Athletics on Sikkim 365. Thanks to Jack McKenzie. We'll be back next Tuesday at 11:15 to talk all the headlines and recruiting stories and whatnot. But until then, for Grayson Grunhafer, I'm Craig Smoke, and this has been the Bearcast on Sikkim365.com.